Morning code, coffee steams.
From archive to your ears, this is Daily Tech Feed from the Labs. Your comprehensive, encyclopedic compendium of all things research. Following the latest trends on archive.org, that's ARXIV.org. This is Frontier Science. I'm Fry.
And I'm Bob. Great to be here, Fry.
From the labs.
Fresh grass, wild schemes, new worlds in a PDF beam. Daily tech feed from the labs.
The next generation of machine learning chips did not fail silently. They just moved the goalposts.
In what way?
By breaking the assumptions baked into every fast attention kernel that came before and forcing the field to rebuild around that truth.
We're talking about Flash Attention 4.
Correct. Welcome to Dispatches from the Edge. I'm Fry.
I'm Bob.
Today's episode is called When the Math Stops Scaling, Chapter 1, The Original Promise.
Why did we even need flash attention in the first place?
Because naive attention is expensive in two ways. First, it reads a lot of memory. Second, it reads that memory in a pattern that can blow up intermediate values. A transformer layer has a score matrix of size query count by key count. If every token had to read that whole matrix in memory at once, training and inference costs explode, so systems teams invented algorithmic shortcuts.
That's the whole reason flash attention became a staple.
Exactly. Flash attention reframed attention as a tiled pipeline. It processes blocks of keys and values in chunks. Instead of materializing the full matrix, it accumulates softmax statistics on the fly and writes compact outputs. That trick changed the conversation from "Can we afford attention at sequence length 2000?" to "Can we run it fast enough to stay on the hardware curve?"
So, what changed in the jump from H100 to Blackwell?
The old design was built assuming hardware scale was mostly uniform. If you double tensor core capability, you often expect memory and math helpers to keep pace in rough proportion. Flash Attention 3 and earlier tuned for that. In Blackwell, tensor core throughput jumped hard, but shared memory bandwidth, the exponential units, and some control logic did not double. So a kernel optimized for old symmetry started tripping over uneven bottlenecks.
So this wasn't a bug in the kernel. It was a mismatch in hardware priorities.
That's the cleanest phrasing. The paper describes this as asymmetric scaling. You can think of compute getting a new superhighway while other lanes stay two lanes wide. The compute lane empties faster than the rest, then stalls waiting for values that didn't grow with it. You get high peak compute, but less useful utilization.
That's what they mean by Blackwell breaking the math. Not mathematically breaking arithmetic, but breaking the old mental model.
Exactly. The model had to be redesigned to match a different bottleneck map. Otherwise, every extra flop on tensor cores is just money burning in a place where the kernel can no longer be fed efficiently.
They had hard evidence? Just theoretical hand-waving?
The benchmark line in the paper makes it explicit. Flash Attention 4 reaches 1,613 teraflops per second on Blackwell BF16 path and reports 71% utilization, which is high for such a memory-sensitive kernel. They also report 1.3 times better than KidNN 9.13 and 2.7 times better than Triton on Blackwell. Those are not paper-only claims, those are deployment-relevant outcomes.
But that's one paper claim. Why should we trust that the architecture itself is the reason, not just better tuning?
The authors isolate that by addressing three pressure points together. They don't say, "We rewrote the kernel, and maybe it's faster." They say, "This hardware has asymmetry, so we redesigned data movement and math scheduling together. Three clusters, fully asynchronous MMA pipelines with larger tiles, software-emulated exponentials with conditional softmax rescaling, and tensor memory paths with a 2CTA MMA mode plus atomic handling in backward."
So the first chapter is the diagnosis. The old assumptions were wrong for Blackwell.
Exactly. And once the diagnosis is right, you can build a kernel that runs with Blackwell's personality instead of against it.
It sounds like this is less of a small optimization and more of a philosophy change.
That's a fair way to put it. Flash Attention 4 is not a patch. It is a co-design statement. Chapter 2, Faster Math, When Math is No Longer the Bottleneck.
Walk me through their larger tiles and OSYNC MMA idea. Why does that matter so much?
Start with MMA, matrix multiply accumulate, the primitive that dominates attention projections and many tensor operations. On older kernels, you often alternate between load phases and compute phases. Even with overlap, synchronization points and pipeline bubbles can waste cycles. On Blackwell, since tensor core throughput improved dramatically, those bubbles become expensive.
So they remove bubbles!
They reduce them aggressively by redesigning the pipeline around fully asynchronous MMA. You can think of each stage doing a fetch into shared memory or registers, then handing off without waiting for a strict lockstep boundary every few steps. Bigger tiles mean each MMA sequence does more useful work per sync point, and each loaded chunk is amortized over more arithmetic.
Bigger tiles usually mean more register pressure and shared memory pressure, though.
Right, and that's the balancing act. If you increase tile size too aggressively, occupancy can collapse because each thread block consumes too much resource. The paper's framing is that Blackwell allows them to shift that balance because tensor throughput is so strong, spending resources on compute-friendlier tiles is often worth the local footprint trade-off, as long as you don't simply move the bottleneck to memory.
This is where the asymmetry argument comes back, right?
Yes. They are not chasing a single metric. They are matching each stage to hardware balance. Spend more cycles where tensor compute is cheap, spend less on operations whose throughput didn't climb. In practical terms, that means fewer forced stalls around MMA boundaries and better sustained occupancy on Blackwell's compute pipeline.
Any evidence that this wasn't just micro-benchmark tuning?
The performance profile line says this matters in realistic training and inference settings. If their redesign were just a benchmark trick, we'd expect narrow gains under specific sequence sizes. Instead, they report meaningful uplift relative to known baselines while keeping core flash attention goals intact. Stable numerics, low memory overhead, and practical BF16 throughput, where many attention workloads live.
So the first mechanism is overlap more, weight less, and make each tile carry more math.
That's a good summary, but it's the wrong to-do list if you keep using old softmax math as is. That's chapter 3. Chapter 3. Making exp the minority path.
Why focus on exponential units? Are they really that important in attention?
They are. Softmax is core to attention. Every row computes exponentials of shifted scores, then normalizes. If exponential throughput lags, those units can become the long pole even when tensor cores are blazing on Blackwell. That imbalance became sharper. Flash Attention 4 treats this directly by software emulating XP and introducing conditional rescaling in the softmax path.
Software emulated exponentials sound suspiciously like approximations. Do they accept accuracy loss?
The term sounds odd because people think approximate equals lossy. But software emulation can still be accurate enough for practical ML, especially when paired with robust normalization strategy. They are not saying drop precision to save cycles. They are saying move critical work onto execution paths that are not constrained by XP hardware throughput, then preserve correctness with explicit control flow.
What is conditional softmax rescaling doing there?
Softmax requires two conditions to remain numerically stable, subtracting a max to avoid overflow and maintaining running sums and maxima as you process tiles. Conditional rescaling lets the kernel decide when rescaling is necessary versus continuing the accumulated path. Instead of paying expensive operations uniformly, it applies rescaling adaptively. That's exactly the kind of conditional optimization that matters when one functional block is comparatively slow.
So the whole point is to avoid overpaying for stable values when they don't need repeated expensive handling.
Precisely. You can view it as selective rigor. keep the mathematics correct, but avoid redundant, expensive math in cases that can skip it.
What about numerical edge cases? Inflection points? Underflow?
Any redesigned softmax path must protect against those. The paper argues they keep stability guarantees central by controlling normalization and tile-wise accumulation. Without that, a speed-up is just a failure, waiting for NANDs in long-context workloads.
In other words, they optimized the expensive control points, not just the arithmetic throughput.
Exactly. Attention kernels are not only math throughput problems, they are data flow and control flow problems too.
That's easy to miss when everyone blames only flops.
Right. This is the core lesson from Blackwell asymmetry, a model that reports one component is superfast, doesn't guarantee whole kernel speedup. The whole pipeline must change.
If softmax becomes cheaper, does this change model behavior at all?
Behavior stays constrained by attention math. They are not changing model semantics, they are changing how we compute. The same kernel faster under hardware constraints. That is the win. It's a systems co-design win. Chapter 4. Traffic control for shared memory.
So when Blackwell accelerates tensor math, where do we spend the rest of the budget?
In movement and accumulation. Memory systems are rarely glamorous, but they determine whether all those tensor operations can be fed consistently.
The earlier summary said they use tensor memory and a 2CTA mode. Why is that such a big deal compared to normal shared memory scheduling?
Shared memory can be fast, but every access still has a cost profile. Bank conflicts, synchronization overhead, write-backs, and pressure from multiple stages in the pipeline. When you add larger MMA tiles and deeper pipelining, those costs can become visible again if you're not careful.
So tensor memory is just a different path to avoid those costs?
It is a more direct path for certain tensor matrix traffic. The design intent is to reduce unnecessary shared memory churn and keep intermediate values closer to where tensor math can consume them without extra staging.
That sounds like moving data fewer times and keeping it hotter.
Exactly. If each tile crosses memory tiers less often, you spend fewer cycles on movement and more cycles on useful arithmetic. On Blackwell, where arithmetic can be abundant, that distinction is real performance.
How do 2CTA MMA modes fit into that? Is that just parallelizing the same work?
It is controlled parallelization. Think of one CTA focusing on a phase of tile progression, while another handles complementary slices. The goal is not raw duplication, it is overlap and reduced duplication.
But then you need to combine results correctly.
Correct, and that is where backward atomic adds come in. The backward pass has multiple contributors to a gradient location. In older designs, those paths can require heavier synchronization patterns. Here they choose atomic accumulation in a constrained form because it can be cheaper overall than forcing strict serialization.
I always worry atomics become silent corruption when race behavior meets floating point.
Your worry is healthy. In this case, the trade is measured. You keep correctness constraints explicit in scheduling, and you reduce the amount of global synchronization the kernel otherwise needs. That can improve throughput with controlled numerical behavior.
So this is another co-design point. Memory architecture, arithmetic layout, and reduction strategy are bound together.
Exactly. This is where architecture awareness moves from strategy to implementation. If they had only tuned constants in the same structure, you hit a wall. If they retuned memory flow with softmax and MMA constraints in mind, they moved the wall.
That feels like queue management with matrix math.
Yes. Attention kernels are queue management with matrix math. Chapter 5. Why rewrite in Qt now?
The paper says they rewrote in Qt DSL inside Python and got 20 to 30 times faster compile times. Why does compile speed matter for a kernel this fast?
It matters, because these kernels aren't frozen. If it takes too long to compile every candidate design, iteration dies. C++ template-heavy kernels can be notoriously hard to iterate quickly, especially for architecture-specific micro-ops.
So the research loop gets bottlenecked by engineering logistics.
Exactly. If your compile cycle takes 20 minutes and architecture keeps changing every quarter, you can't explore enough. Qt DSL in Python lowers the iteration friction. The paper claims 20 to 30 times faster compilation versus C++ templates, which is huge when you're trying to tune tile schedules and synchronization details.
Faster compile means more experiments. More experiments means better final kernel.
Exactly. It lets researchers do the same loop we do in software engineering. Hypothesize, implement, measure, repeat. Instead of implement once and pray, they can push architecture-specific variants and settle on robust settings.
Why not do this in Triton if Qt is so niche?
Triton is excellent for many kernels and has a strong developer ecosystem, but as soon as you need the finest grain control over asynchronous MMA scheduling and tensor-level layout choices, you begin hitting abstraction ceilings. Qt gives this paper room to express the same operations with fewer workaround hacks.
So we trade ergonomics for control.
Right? And then trade back with workflow discipline. You keep the script and schedule choices as data, not tribal memory. That is how a less ergonomic layer can remain usable in a production team.
That's a nice framing.
It is also pragmatic. If your compile step is slower by a large constant, your CI and iteration rhythm are slow. You only test what you can afford to test. If Qt shortens compile from 20 minutes to under 1 minute in some loops, your hypothesis budget expands significantly.
Are we sure those claims translate outside single-kernel benchmarking?
That's exactly the open question teams should keep asking. But the direction is clear. If compile velocity doubles exploration velocity, your teams can run more architecture-specific experiments before the next generation lands.
Does this have a downside beyond complexity?
Compile determinism and portability can become new pain points, especially if toolchains drift with driver versions and Python environment updates. That is why you separate the experimentation path from the stable production path and pin your toolchain versions.
Is there a downside to this rewrite? Stability? Readability? Maintainability?
There is no free lunch. A new DSL stack can add onboarding complexity, dependency assumptions, and occasional sharp edges. But for this class of optimization problem, the compile time and meta-programming savings can dominate, especially when you're running on a rapidly shifting hardware baseline.
So, this is less about language preference and more about throughput in the development feedback loop.
Yes. If you're shipping kernel code for cutting-edge accelerators, you need the ability to land architecture-tuned changes fast. Suite helps keep pace with hardware releases that materially change optimal schedules.
They also claim to beat Cut'n and Triton.
Again, CUN 9.13 is no ordinary baseline. It is mature and highly optimized. Triton is also high quality for many cases, reporting 1.3 times better than Cut'n End and 2.7 times faster than Triton on Blackwell gives you a strong signal this is not just compile time convenience, it is meaningful runtime performance engineering.
So the architecture change is real, and the implementation path is built around it, not hand-wavy.
Yes, that's the strongest takeaway.
I want to push this back to the pipeline assumption point. If the hardware shifts under us again, what happens when one of those units scales unexpectedly in Blackwell successors?
Great question. That's why this matters beyond one kernel. Flash Attention 4 shows a template. Do not hard code assumptions about balanced scaling. Write kernels and tuning workflows that can retune scheduling to whatever the hardware ratio becomes. Use design points that are explicit about which unit is bottlenecking you.
So, the lesson for kernel engineers is not just build Flash Attention 4. It's build an assumption-aware stack.
Exactly. The right stack can treat each new architecture as a different puzzle. Where is the memory wall? Where is the math wall? Where are control hazards? Where is compile friction? Where is numerical fragility?
Which feels weirdly like software architecture in disguise.
It is software architecture. We pretend kernels are just low-level code, but this paper treats kernel code as the interface between hardware asymmetry and model execution economics.
So, what should systems folks do this week if they care about this trend?
Two things. First, profile with the bottleneck mindset on your target architecture instead of inheriting H100-era priors. Second, keep your kernel development stack flexible enough to evolve quickly, because assumptions are now moving every generation. If your compile and experimentation loop is slow, you'll be late by default.
And for model teams planning long context runs?
They should expect attention stack choices to become as strategic as model architecture choices. If your hardware curve changes, your attention implementation choices become first-order performance features.
If you had to summarize this in one practical rule,
match kernel structure to hardware asymmetry and verify by measurements, not nostalgia.
That sounds like an optimization engineer's nightmare and opportunity.
Exactly. It is both a nightmare for teams still writing kernels against old balance assumptions, an opportunity for teams that can co-design software with the asymmetry instead of around it.
On Blackwell, then, memory, XP units, and synchronization are the new first-class citizens.
Yes, but not in a way that slows the paper down. They became constraints to be managed with tile geometry, asynchronous overlap, rescaling control, and smarter compile tooling.
And if that sounds abstract, the empirical result is 1,613 teraflops and better utilization.
Performance numbers matter because they are outcomes, but the design method matters more. Performance without method is a fragile win. Method without performance is an essay. Flash Attention 4 does both.
Final question. If Blackwell broke the old math, what breaks next?
Whatever next hardware generation keeps breaking old assumptions. So the best defense is not just a faster kernel this quarter, it's a faster rethinking loop. That's the math challenge. The equations didn't change, but the hardware contract did.
And maybe that's the lesson for everyone, not just transformer people.
Every system layer from kernels to application pipelines has the same problem. If your bottleneck map shifts and your abstractions don't, you will optimize the wrong thing.
So the lesson in one sentence?
Never optimize assuming scaling symmetry.
That's a useful distinction.
Asymmetric hardware breaks old intuition. The best answer is to rebuild intuition first, then code.
And dispatching from where? The edge?
Dispatches from the edge.
Right.
Stay curious.
This podcast is entirely AI generated. Scripts written by Claude Opus 4.6. Voices rendered by Tianwen 3TTS. That's Quen 3TTS for us English speakers. Find Daily Tech Feed from the labs on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever fine podcasts are distributed. All of our shows here at Daily Tech Feed are available at pod.c457.org. Not affiliated with any companies or researchers discussed. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow. Wild schemes, new worlds in a PDF beam. Daily tech feed from the labs. Tiny sparks turning into maps. Archive pages in a gentle sway. Tomorrow's tricks in my ears today.